Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and you're listening to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is Mark Upton, Chief Executive of Oxeyes, and the first blind person to take up the role of leading a local sight loss charity. Hello, Mark, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, Toby. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honour to be here.
So, Mark, looking at your list of tracks, there are a few sort of heavy rock runs on there. And I wondered, how did you find it just selecting seven tracks?
Yeah, it's quite an eclectic mix. So a bit of a roller coaster ride for everybody today, I think, put it that way. But it was fun, actually. It was fun, but it was very hard. I did feel I could have chosen a track for several tracks for each year for the past 10 years at least. It was hard because music plays such an important part of my life. I absolutely love music, as we'll find out in a minute. I love different genres of music, different styles. It was hard, and I wanted music to reflect kind of the times I had throughout my life, and it was quite a challenge, but I did enjoy it. So thank you for the opportunity, because it brought back a lot of memories of music and memories in my life.
Well, we are going to start with a real classic rock track, and Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen, which I think takes you back to early teenage life for you. And did you start playing air guitar when you first heard Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah, definitely. So this song, the reason I started listening to it and to other sort of similar music at the time was I was given or bought a album for Christmas, which was called the best air guitar album in the world ever, which I think was compiled by Brian May from Queen. I must have been into rock before that, but I was given it and it really kind of introduced me to a lot of classic rock music. And I think at that time I wasn't, or sort of pre-teens, I wasn't very musical. Family wasn't very musical necessarily. Didn't grow up with a lot of music, and I guess it was that kind of teenage thing of having something different that the rest of my family didn't have. And it was listening to kind of classic tracks, classic rock tracks, and I feel like Bohemian Rhapsody really sums them all up. I don't know, it's a very famous song, and a lot of people like it, so it really sums up, I guess, the whole classic rock era for me.
Do you obviously remember it from Wayne's World at all?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Wayne's World was my favourite film at that age. Absolutely loved it. And that scene in Wayne's World is brilliant. So, yeah, that was a brilliant film for me. So I had it on VHS and I think I wore it out. Let's just say that.
And you say that this track started your discovery of real music. What do you mean by real music?
So probably through my childhood, so I was the youngest of three, two older sisters, and there was a lot of pop music at the time. Now, I won't name any names of groups, but just so I don't offend anyone. But it was for me a discovery of, bands and guitars, drums, vocals, all that stuff, and what I would call talented musicians. And I think that for me, that was a discovery of kind of the structure of music as well, and I really got into that. So probably at a very similar time I started to learn to play guitar myself, and I guess probably quite influenced by a lot of those classic rock tracks and classic metal tracks.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the...
The classic Queen track Bohemian Rhapsody there, and I think one which everyone can remember hearing for the first time. Mark, we now come to a track that marks GCSE exam time for you. I think school days were perhaps not the best times for you. Would you be able to tell me why this was so and what school life was like for you.
Yeah, school was never... I did struggle with school. I didn't really enjoy it. And I can sum it up, really, because people later on in life would say things like, oh, it wasn't school the best years of your life. I sat there thinking, no, they weren't. These are the best years of my life. You know, school, it just felt so... I don't know whether it was the structure of it or, you know, just being visually impaired at school was obviously quite a challenge. I did have support, and I probably used visual impairment as an excuse when I was younger. I was obviously picked on. I think a lot of visually impaired people, children do get picked on. I've had that experience, but that wasn't awful. But I think education for me was a challenge, and still to this day, I'm not a big fan of a sort of classroom setting, you know, the kind of 30 odd people in a room. I tend to learn by doing, you know, I learn by doing things. And I think for me, school, I didn't really have that opportunity there. So yeah, I didn't really enjoy it, unfortunately.
And I think that your sort of GCSE time is sort of an end of a chapter in life for many people. Some go on to A levels, others go on to college, some might even go to work. And there's always that feeling of a bit of freedom and a long summer holiday for some. Did you feel that GCSE time was an end of a chapter for you and maybe the starting of another?
Definitely. So when I did my GCSEs, you finish early for summer, so you have that time to revise for your exams. And I think, I can't remember, it must have been in May, and I just remember those sort of sunny May days and just waking up in the morning thinking, I don't have to go in, you know, I have to revise, but I can do that at home and I don't have to go into school. And this song that obviously we're going to play, it just reminds me of that time, that period in my life where I knew I had my exams to go, but I knew after that I didn't have to go back. And that was just so, I don't know, refreshing, so releasing. It was like the freedom I felt, you know, totally unguided freedom. I had no idea what was next, but it was just a sense of freedom. And spring always feels like that for me now. I love playing this song and album this time, you know, at springtime, just because it sort of gives me that sense of freedom. I don't know.
Pearl Jam and Alive There, and a track that marks the end of school days for you, Mark. We now come to a track from an album that you played on your Discman on your chain journeys in and out to college. Am I right in thinking that you wanted to do woodwork, and was this the course that you did do at college?
Yeah, so I came from very practical family, sort of in the building trade and furniture making and that, you know, going back to my grandparents kind of era, and my parents kind of work. So it's all very practical work that my family did, and I really wanted to get into it. I think because of the experience at school, that classroom setting, I didn't like it, so I wanted to do something practical. And my parents were great, you know, that I think they knew I was going to struggle, but they let me, you know. And that was part of my discovery, I suppose, of doing woodwork and being absolutely awful at it and not being able to do half the stuff. And I had one teacher saying, oh, you wouldn't be good at doing sort of carpentry work because you would really struggle on the building site because of your vision. I was like, okay. And then the other side, well, you wouldn't be very good at joinery work because it's too fine detail. You'd be better at the site work. I was like, right, okay. And then it turned out I was awful at either of both of them. So it was a bit of a trial and error period of my life. Yeah, probably slightly misguided, slightly lost and confused. But yeah, it's a time I kind of spent a lot of time on train journeys at that period, so music was a big part of it.
When you do look back at those college days, and maybe putting the work bit aside for one moment, were they good days? Did you have good friends, and did you go out and enjoy yourself quite a lot?
To be honest, I was quite a shy person. I still am quite an introvert. I wasn't, you know, I had a sort of small group of friends wasn't really a party person. I didn't really fit, so you know, the music didn't really fit the lifestyle of it. Although, I had long hair at this point, so I'd grown my hair out long, and I'd kind of, I guess, in a rebellious way. Yeah, I did enjoy it. Again, that sense of freedom. It wasn't school. I think I much preferred this kind of time of my life than I did when I was at school. A bit more freedom of sort of doing what you want, although not really, but you think you're doing what you want at that age. Yeah, I did enjoy it.
There's an interesting line, I think, in the track that you have chosen, which relates back to Eyes in some way. And I wondered if you could tell me, what is the track that does take you back to those college days? And is it a good track to maybe lose yourself to on your journey in and out?
Yeah, so it's a very heavy track, so apologies to anyone if you still are listening to R&IB. It's Duality by Slipknot. It's a nice heavy track.
I push my fingers into my eyes. It's the only thing that slowly stops the ache, but it's made of all the things I have to take.
Slipknot and Duality there, and a blast off a reel. What track two? Mark, for your next track, we come to a time in your mid-20s in Chichester, where you were working for Foresight at the time, and maybe a bit of a change in the direction of your musical taste, perhaps. You say that this track sums up your life in Chichester, your housemates, your work at Foresight. What was life like for you at that time?
Yeah, so this probably covers quite a big period of time, really, but it's, I guess, maybe a sense of maturing would probably be part of it. Again, probably more freedom. I was living in a house share, which was great. With sort of there's four of us living in this house. Different people moved in and out over time, but it was always, we always got on really well, and it was just, you know, really, really kind of, I say, chilled out period of my life. You know, there was responsibility, but it wasn't a huge amount in terms of work and lifestyle. It was, yeah, I guess, kind of chilled out. As you know, and as we probably say, listening to a lot more music now, so my taste has certainly mellowed, as we'll find out. It's a bit of a complete drop. This is to the level of music, but it was just a really great time. Really, you know, made lots of great friends who are still really good friends now, and yeah, I just look back at them with really fond memories.
And what was that job at Foresight? How did it come about?
Yeah, so before that, I was working at House of Fraser, which was there for a year. And that was probably my first proper job at House of Fraser. And I got the job because somebody I knew was a manager there, and they gave me the opportunity because, as a lot of us know, when you're visually impaired, getting a job is really hard. Particularly that first job, that first opportunity. Before that, I was sort of unemployed for a time and really struggled with getting a job. But then this person gave me the opportunity, and it gave me that opportunity to actually realise that I had potential. And although I didn't necessarily enjoy the work at House of Fraser in retail, I look back on it and realise it was a real character building time, where I could realise my potential. Before that, I didn't have a huge amount of self-esteem. Yeah, there wasn't much self-worth. Again, I didn't really know what I was going to do. And to be honest, when I got the job at House of Fraser, I was like, right, well, I got a job. This is it for the rest of my life now. I'll be working in retail. And there were people that worked there for 30, 40 years. I was like, that's going to be me. You know, I can't really give much else. And then I started to think, oh, maybe that I could do something else. Maybe I could try something. You know, I wanted to work with people. I enjoyed the customers. To a degree, and I wanted to work with you know, people and helping people out and giving back to society, I suppose. And I knew of Foresight. So Foresight used to be called West Sussex Association for the Blind, and they I knew of them as a child, and knew about their services. But for some reason, I just randomly went on their website and saw that they had a job vacancy for it was an assistant outreach worker, I think it was. And I applied for it thinking, there's no way I'm going to get this job. the only thing I know about visual impairment is my own experience. I didn't really know other visually impaired people, didn't know much about the sector or the services at all. And anyway, I ended up getting the job. And that, you know, it was the first time I found out that you could actually have a job that you enjoy. You know, I didn't really, you know, I kind of thought jobs were just, you know, the thing you do 9 to 5 and then thank goodness when you go home at 5. But actually I really enjoyed it, really enjoyed the people I worked with, and realized that I could actually do something and achieve something. And I think I look back at, I think they gave me a lot of freedom in that job, and that's something which has stuck with me. And I think it's really important with work is to let people have that freedom. Yeah, it was a really big change in my life, I suppose, to actually realize I could have a job which I could be good at and I could enjoy, and I felt like I was giving back to other people. And I met so many amazing people at that time. It was just an amazing start to what, you know, to my career, really.
Well, it's a career that I think you stayed in, isn't it, as well?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. Still here, so.
And your chosen track that takes you back to those times. When did you first hear this track, and who introduced you to this type of music? Because, as we said earlier on, it's a bit of a change.
So one of my housemates was really into, like I said, we call it sort of indie folk, and he started playing it to me, and I really started getting into it. And I think it's, you know, there's still an alternative element to it that's probably relatively niche, but I guess it kind of captured me. I think this song is really beautiful. I really like it. I think it's a really nice, calming song, and I really love this sort of style of music.
I have called you children. I have called you son. What is there to answer if I'm the only one? Morning comes in paradise. Morning comes.
Sufjan Stevens there, and what a lovely track too. Mark, we now come to a track that I think is what we might say is the love song. And
the mushy part of the time, yeah, definitely. Grab your buckets.
Yeah, and I think it was the first track that you and your wife danced to. How did you and your wife first meet then?
So at this point in my life, I had moved to Oxford. So I'd left Chichester. I left Forsyth and I moved up to Oxford to join the Oxfordshire Association for the Blind, which is where I'm still at. And I was living in Oxford, and I met me and my wife Erica. We met online, so I went on the online dating scene. Gosh. So a very modern couple that we are, and we just sort of hit it off, really. Had a few dates, yeah, and I guess we sort of developed our friendship and love from that point, and then ended up moving in together, and then got married. It'll be our 5th wedding anniversary this year. So, yeah.
And how was dating as a visually impaired person? Because I can imagine that might have been slightly tricky.
Yeah, it was. So, at the time, so interesting, when we first met, my vision, so growing up, I was registered partially sighted, and because I was born with it, I could kind of get away with doing a lot, you know, independently, I suppose, and I still do now. But it was interesting when you kind of share it, and I think, you know, about the visual impairment and what impact that has on your life. But it wasn't really a big issue. And I think, interestingly, not that long after we met, or actually not that long after we got engaged, my vision started to deteriorate, and I had quite a few operations on my eyes over a period of time, which is a really hard point in my life. We'd not been, you know, we've literally just got engaged, and then suddenly my wife is in a hospital, you know, waiting for me to come out of surgery, and that's a really hard time. And you know, my sight deteriorated relatively quickly, and there's also this shock element. I mean, the actual vision loss you get used to over time, but at the time it was more of the shock. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my goodness, this has suddenly happened, and it was a bit of a shock. And you know, you had the medical side of it was really like, oh, you know, as a lot of other vision impaired people would know, the medical side, they don't really communicate, so you have no idea what's going on. So that was really, and yeah, Erica really obviously was there for me and really supporting me through that time of change. And yeah, that was quite a big change, I guess, in my life. And that's the thing, you know, you really know when you're with the right person, when they can support you through that change in life, and, you know, quite dramatic change, because it wasn't expected at all. I knew my vision would deteriorate, but I was always told it'd be a lot later in life, you know, in my sort of 50s, 60s kind of age. I wasn't expecting this at all. So it came out of complete bolt out of the blue. But yeah, we got through it together, and that's what it's all about, I suppose, supporting each other.
The track that you did first dance to is Thinking Out Loud by Ed Sheeran, who is a great musician, singer, songwriter, and very talented too. But I wondered what your sort of old rock mates might think of you choosing this track then.
Yeah, I have to say, I do like Ed Sheeran for some things, but I'm not the biggest fan, but I do like some of the acoustic songs, and I totally appreciate how his talent and his musicality and everything like that. So it's obviously quite a change from that Slipknot track, really, isn't it? But I mean, I suppose that's my life, really. It's sort of, you know, life is ups and downs and changes. I think I love all sorts of music, you know, whether it's really heavy or whether it's really mellow, whether it's that kind of pop song.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet, will your mouth still remember the taste of my love?
The very talented Ed Sheeran there, and a track for you and your wife, Mark. We now come to a track that is dedicated to your son, which is from a Coen Brothers film, Brother, Where Art Thou? And I think you actually sang this track to your son when your wife was pregnant with him. Is this film one of your favourite films of all time then?
It's up there. I love this film. Again, you know, I think a lot of my films I like, there's a theme here. It's got music in it, or it's musical. And this film, very funny as well, but loads of great music. So in terms of the folk sort of bluegrass tunes, but yeah, I like anything with a banjo in, really. I think that comes up quite often. But yeah, this track was obviously quite a special one for us.
And I think you heard about the arrival of your son, your wife being pregnant, at the beginning of all the lockdowns in 2020, which must have been sort of maybe difficult times for you both. Was it quite difficult at that time?
Yeah, so we found out just probably 2 or 3 weeks before Boris Johnson came on the TV to tell us all to stay at home. So it was quite a frightening time in that sense of, you know, I mean, I think everybody had anxiety at that point, didn't they? You know, there was worry if we was going to get any toilet paper at one point. So, and we didn't know no one knew what was going on. And I remember the GP telling my wife, the GP said, it's probably best not to Google COVID and pregnancy. So it was like, what? You know, because they didn't know anything at that point. They had no idea. So, at that point, my wife was obviously quite unwell at the early stage of the pregnancy, and we didn't have any food in the house. And I was like, right, well, I've got to go out and find something. So that was a real challenge as well as thinking, you know, what world are we bringing our son into now? You know, it's just, there was so much uncertainty. And I think there is for parents anyway, but before you have a child, is that, you know, it's uncertainty of, am I actually going to be a good parent? What's the birth going to be like? Are there going to be any complications and all this stuff? And obviously there's so many worries and so many fears around that. But to be in lockdown at the same time and not to be able to see friends and family just added to that sort of stress of it. And thankfully we were both able to carry on working from home. I think if I wasn't working, I think I would have really struggled, and you know, because a lot of people were furloughed at that point, you know, you would have probably gone out of my mind. I would have really struggled to do that, and I know people did. But to have that added, obviously, excitement as well, I mustn't forget about the excitement of it, but it was also just mixed in with the fear and the anxiety of COVID and a small baby arriving in the world, and then obviously the visual impairment part as well. You know, how on earth do I look after a child with a visual impairment? And you know, what? How am I going to cope with this? How am I going to cope with that? It all goes through your mind.
But also, it might be, in a way, it sounds strange, but to say this, but in a way, a good sign, the arrival of your son in the middle of a pandemic, sort of maybe a sign that, you know, there is a future for us all, and you know, that, you know, things will possibly get better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely, it's, you know, I felt for us it was like the light at the end of the tunnel, in a sense, and we, you know, once we got past that first couple of months of obviously uncertainty at the beginning, and the illness, I think, you know, when I think the hard part is as well, my wife Erica was reading these books about pregnancy, and you're in the second trimester, they call it, now's the time to go on a short break to really enjoy yourselves, and we were yeah, we can't leave the house, so that was a real struggle. There's, you know, they're saying enjoy those last moments of freedom is basically what they were saying, and we were, you know, in COVID times. But I think also the other part of it was we had something to focus on, which I think obviously was really important during COVID, to have that focus, that excitement as well, which actually after a while, after the initial first sort of couple of months of COVID, when you start to I suppose get used to it, if we can, but you have that then excitement of the baby arriving.
And which of the tracks from the film did you used to sing to your son, and why this particular track?
So the tracks are You Are My Sunshine, and I guess it's, I think we were watching a show and somebody, or a TV show, and somebody was singing this to their baby, and I don't know why I just started singing it to the, our boy in, when he was in the womb. And by saying, oh, it's really good to talk to them in the womb and sing to them. I was like, well, to be honest, I can't really sing, but, you know, here we go. And then after a while, they start kicking. And you know, when you sing, when they hear your voice, they start reacting. And it's just an absolutely magical kind of time. But this song, there's something about the lyrics. It just, I think, to be honest, it's probably a love song, actually. I don't think it's necessarily designed to sing to your child, but it's, you know... Yeah, I think the lyrics just obviously stand out, and you know, I think just a really nice song, and obviously there are quite a few different versions of it, but I really like this one because I really like the film. I like the bluegrass element to it.
You Are My Sunshine there by Norman Blake, and a track for your son too, Mark. Now we come to your final track, Mark, the one that you might like to pass on but might give people hope for the future, or maybe just inspire people. What's the track and why have you chosen it?
So the track is I Won't Back Down. It's a cover done by Johnny Cash, and to be honest, I couldn't do a seven track in my life without including Johnny Cash. It's somewhere in there. For me, it's the lyrics. I think, you know, musically, it's, I wouldn't say it's necessarily musically inspiring, but the lyrics are really always stuck with me. And sometimes I put this on when I'm feeling a little bit low, or I feel like I've hit a brick wall with something we're doing, or I feel like, you know, sometimes you feel like giving up with something, and this track really inspires me to just keep going at times when it's getting tough. And the lyrics that really stand out is the line, I know what's right, I've just got one life, in a world that keeps on pushing me around, I won't back down and I'll stand my ground. And I think those feel really powerful, particularly when you're visually impaired and you've had, you know, that line, you know, in a world that keeps on pushing me around. And you know, maybe not everybody feels this way, but sometimes you do just feel a bit of a second class citizen, a bit like the world is not quite designed for you. But that, just that line, you've got one life and you know what's right, and that's it really. You know what's right, keep going for it. And you know, whether it's in your own life or whether you're campaigning, you know, it feels like a bit of a campaigning song, but but you know, that it could mean different things to different people, you know, facing different situations. And I think it just stirs me on, and I just love the way Johnny Cash sings it as well. This is Johnny Cash in his latter years, in his American recordings, and you know he's obviously lived a very long life at this point. And it just felt a really powerful. It just feels like a really powerful song.
Well, thank you so much, Mark Upton, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Toby. It's been an honour, and I hope people have enjoyed the roller coaster of a ride.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.